You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 102, Your iPhone is watching you. All the time. This week on the podcast, a hacker leaked decryption keys for Apple's secure enclave, affecting the security of it, but not in the way that you think. And we also talked about the Touch ID sensor in the iPhone 8, or lack thereof, that Apple is supposedly going all in on the face unlock technology, and we go into detail about that. And Samsung's Air is going to jail. Stay tuned for that. That's coming up next on The Impromptu.
They're just out to get me. They're just out to get my money.
When everything is broken and nothing's going right.
So, we'll start off with a little bit of a minor security thing. A security researcher was able to obtain the decryption key for the secure enclave on Apple's iPhone chips. Oh, actually, sorry. It's not a security researcher. It's a hacker. But he published it on GitHub. I don't know. Maybe he's a white hat. I'm not sure. But the point is, he has it. Now, what that means is, it doesn't mean that all the data on the secure enclave can be accessed remotely. The secure enclave is effectively cut off from the rest of the phone. You have to physically have access to the phone in order to be able to read the secure enclave. And two, it doesn't help you access it, but instead it gives you the ability to decrypt it and get into the firmware code that governs the secure enclave. So it doesn't give you the data per se, but it lets you peek into the secure enclave, which is helpful for security researchers because it'll allow them to poke it for vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So this is by no means a workable method of attack against anyone's phone. This is just the first step in finding vulnerabilities in the secure enclave. And it's entirely likely that Apple has already patched whatever means this individual used to obtain the key.
It is very curious how he got his hands on it. And I don't think they go into detail about that.
No, they don't. So
that does worry me.
It's worrying, but they do have one of the best security teams out there. They've made some very key hires in the past few years.
Well, I should hope so. I certainly have the capital and resources for that.
Exactly. I'm fairly confident that this won't actually impact iPhone security at all. If anything, it could help it because security researchers using this key could find vulnerabilities that Apple hasn't found, and then they can be patched. But of course, it's always difficult because this is hardware and it isn't necessarily going to be fixed with firmware updates. So, I mean, moving forward, like the upcoming iPhones will be more secure than the previous ones. So the 7S or the 8 will be more secure than the 7. And that's been true for every model that Apple's released. The secure enclave has become more and more secure, more and more hardened against intrusion. They've added in a number of things to prevent tampering, any number of countermeasures. In fact, in the HomePod code, it appears that the ambient light sensor has now been tied into the security framework for the new iPhones. So if, for example, the phone is cracked open, that disables the ambient light sensor because the display is no longer connected.
Okay, I follow.
And apparently that locks out the system. Like once it detects that the screen has been removed, as in someone has opened up the phone, it assumes that someone is trying to crack the phone, get the data on it, and it basically locks up. I think it even erases the secure enclave data.
That's actually quite clever.
Yeah, it's actually a poison pill routine. The only way to get data out of the phone is to crack open the phone. But if you crack open the phone, it erases the data. So Apple is effectively cutting off that avenue of attack. Obviously, there may still be a way to get around it, like somehow trick the ambient light sensor or keep the display connected while it's cracked open. That could be difficult, but not necessarily impossible. Unless they deliberately designed the new sensor in such a way that the reverse side of it also detects light. So if you did crack open the display, suddenly that side would be illuminated. Of course, then you could get away with that. You could put the phone in the dark, I suppose, and use like infrared night vision to see. I don't know. I mean, there might be a way around it, but for all intents and purposes, it does make the phone more secure. And then for repairs, I assume that once everything's reconnected, you would just restore from an iCloud backup, or possibly there'd be some kind of reauthentication procedure where you decrypt the phone using one of your other devices, because they already have some capacity for that. Like if you try to log in with your Apple ID, the two-factor authentication that Apple has requires that you get a code on one of your trusted devices, and then you enter that code, which is way more secure than other two-factor authentication, such as the ones that use text, because obviously we now know that those messages can be intercepted. Whereas this, it actually uses a direct system API that I think is connected to push notifications. So it's secure and encrypted, and only your trusted devices can get those messages. They wouldn't do it if they didn't have something in place to make it easy on consumers.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so yeah, I think that, I mean, I don't think we need to go much further than that, because I think you basically covered all of that stuff. But as far as speaking of security too, we were actually just talking offline earlier about how, because I heard this week that it seems like more and more people are still talking that the Touch ID sensor, because of complications in the display, that it's not really going to be integrated into the screen. And you had an interesting take that Apple's plan is to really go all in on the face unlock technology, which I think we should maybe talk a little bit more about, because I also heard that you don't need to look directly at the phone for this thing to work. So they basically want to get, they are going to get rid of the thumbprint, essentially, the need for that.
Yeah. So as we saw in the HomePod code, Pearl is the only authentication method on the iPhone 8. And Pearl is Face ID, face unlock. So Apple is killing Touch ID and moving to this face recognition system. So the face data is stored on the secure enclave, just like your fingerprint. The phone, using a sensor on the front, an infrared, actually, I think there's like multiple sensors. There's an infrared sensor and there's a laser sensor. And those, in concert with the camera, literally scan the contours of your face. So it captures an incredible amount of data about the structure and shape of every detail on your face.
And the older you are, it tracks all of those little individual creases and wrinkles that you don't want it to.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, it depends on the resolution. It might not get some of the finest details.
Right. But it's a necessary thing, though, to get this technology down, right?
Yeah. So it captures things like the distance between your eyes, the shape of your nose, the size of your lips, cheekbones, all of those things. Like there's about 20 to 30 different data points that are referenced in the HomePod code about details on your face that it's able to read. I think it even captures the size of your neck, which is interesting.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, all of these data points basically map to a reconstructed 3D model of your face that it stores securely encrypted on the secure enclave. And
supposedly you can have the phone on your desk and it'll still be able to unlock.
Right. So
how does that work?
The infrared and laser sensors likely are on a much wider angle than the camera. So the camera obviously is not the primary source of authentication data for this system. The laser and infrared would be. And if they're at a severe wide angle, it would be able to capture data. I don't know. It depends exactly what the angle is, but I could see it being quite substantial, like possibly up to 180 degrees from the surface of the phone. So even if it's slightly tilted towards you, it would be able to authenticate. And because of the infrared sensor and the laser sensor, it can work in the dark too. So,
and that's actually more important than you would think.
Yeah.
Considering how many situations we find ourselves looking at our phones. I mean, how many times you lie in your bed at night?
Yeah,
you know, looking
exactly.
at your phone in the darkness like an idiot?
Yeah. So unlike Samsung's feature, so the S8 had this sort of face unlock thing. It used your eyes, but that was entirely camera driven, which is why it doesn't work very well. This is using actual scanning technology, so it's miles ahead, yeah. way more accurate.
I'm still surprised that they put something in there that was based off of camera tech, because I mean,
this
how
is
many
Samsung.
Times has this have other you've seen other companies try
yeah.
to do this with camera stuff and
yeah.
it just doesn't work and it's easy to fool.
Yeah, of course.
Microsoft did this more than 10 years ago.
They were able to fool the Samsung one with yeah. a photo of the person.
It's just absurd.
So yeah, like Apple has leapfrogged this entire thing. Now, to Microsoft's credit, Windows Hello has a similar spec. So when you're using a webcam to authenticate to log into Windows 10, it requires that the webcam have an infrared sensor. So Windows Hello actually requires that the camera be able to scan your face. So it's not as simple as a photograph. It is actually depth scanning your face. There's only a handful of cameras that can actually do this. There's a brand new one from Logitech that's about $200. It's a 4K webcam that has a Windows Hello infrared
yeah,
sensor on it.
I almost bought one of those. The C something 900 something
yeah.
series. Yeah.
And there's also an Intel development kit webcam that has the sensor in it. And I think Razer was also working on one. So there's like a handful of webcams that can do it. Of course, the Surface tablets, I think, have it built in.
So why is
but,
it? Is it the fact that you're relying on the camera tech that makes it weak, or is it just a resolution thing or an exposure thing?
It's like, entirely what? The camera. Like, you can't rely on a camera to have a secure facial recognition because cameras capture data, they open the aperture, and it's essentially a 2D capture. Like, it's not reading depth at all. You can try and do some fancy math to kind of calculate depth points, but it's never going to be as accurate as a legitimate depth scanner, which is why the new iPhone is essentially going to be a giant AR sensor, the front and the back. It can read everything around it, including your face. And so this technology will be far more accurate than any facial recognition that's been done before. That also means it'll have trickle-down effects when it comes to things like selfies. So, you know, Snapchat and Instagram, how they have those face filters, right?
Yeah.
The iPhone 8, with the new sensors, it reads the contours of your face. So those filters will be far more accurate. So you'll be able to wear silly hats and have glasses.
And actually the Snapchat stuff is, it's not terrible now.
No.
So just imagine how much better it will be.
Exactly. Exactly.
Especially with a 4K front facing camera. If it actually is.
Yeah.
We're thinking.
It could still be 1080p, but even then, with the sensors on the front, it won't matter what the resolution of the camera
that's,
is.
That's really going to set a new standard if it's 4K, though.
But yeah. So anyways, back to the whole security thing. It's more accurate. It works in the dark. It works at wide angles. And more importantly, the phone actively scans for your face. So at some interval, maybe every 2 or 3 seconds, it is checking for your presence. There is reference to presence detection in iOS 11 in the HomePod code. So what that means is the iPhone 8 constantly is aware if you personally, as the individual the phone belongs to, are looking at it. So that means security moves from a contextual awareness to a dynamic awareness. The phone knows if you're looking at it. The phone knows if you're holding it. If somebody else steps into the shot, it locks itself. All of the data on the phone, your apps, paying for things, all of that stuff, it is only accessible if you are looking at the phone. So instead of having to press the Touch ID button for a second or two, the phone is constantly authenticated if you're looking at it. So,
and this wouldn't affect the battery?
Maybe presumably it's not
very low power.
It may be low power. They may have created a coprocessor that handles the scanning.
But I gotta say, if it works as well as you describe, I mean, it's gonna be a game changer, because just how many times has your finger been cold while you're outside
wet,
and it doesn't read it, or wet, or it's got perspiration on it. I mean, it doesn't read it properly when that happens, or you get, you know, you have finger grease on your screen. You got to constantly wipe your phone for it to read properly, right? So all that goes away.
Yeah, exactly. Because you no longer have to touch your phone to be authenticated. It just knows, oh, hey, you're looking at me. You're allowed. So it just kind of makes security this ambient thing that you don't really notice. Like, you're not actively authenticating. It just knows for you. And the minute that somebody that isn't you tries to look at your phone, it locks itself.
It'll be interesting to see, though, whether or not what's going to happen with low power mode. Like, when your phone drops below 20%, if that has to turn off and then you have to put in your thumbprint.
There won't be Touch ID. There's no room for Touch ID.
They would have to figure out a way to get that working.
Well,
even
you would
in low power mode.
You would just use your passcode.
Oh, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Except I use an alphanumeric one that's really complex and long.
Yeah. Wow. I mean,
but that's
not everybody does that.
No. I don't use the 4. I don't know. Using just a pin code is not the greatest.
No. Though they did move to more digits, which is inherently more secure.
Right.
But yeah, I'm honestly not sure what the power drain on this thing is, especially if it's polling every few seconds to see if you are looking at the phone. Presumably, they've figured out a way to keep it very low power, because you would not have a feature that is constantly drawing power every few seconds if you hadn't found a way to make it use as little power as possible. So I'm sure we'll get a lot of details about this, and they'll explain what happens in low power
mode. We're real close now to the event, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, are we a week or more? A little more than a week, right? September is next week.
Yeah. So supposedly the event is on the 12th, which means we could get invites as early as next week.
Right.
But probably the first week of September.
Yeah.
Like the first proper week, because September 1st is Thursday?
Wednesday? Something like that. I have to look. It's coming.
That.
So we're going to know in the next podcast, possibly. Well, by next week, we may actually know when we record when at least the date is for the event.
Yeah. So, I mean, 12th just came from some random carrier source. We don't know if it's accurate. So, I mean, it could be earlier.
Do you know offhand, do you remember when the iPhone event was last September?
I believe it was the 7th.
Okay, so it was pretty early on.
Yeah. So the past few years, they've gotten progressively earlier. 3 years ago, it was the 12th. Then it was the 9th. Then it was the 7th. So now this year, they might go back to the 12th, as is rumored, or it could be even earlier. But we won't know until the invites come out. So we're going to have to wait for that. So pretty close to the wire. I think the other thing to keep in mind is Apple isn't about to replace Touch ID unless the thing they're replacing it with is just as good, if not better.
Yeah, it has to
be. They're not stupid. They're not going to say, oh, we got rid of Touch ID and we brought in this other thing and then everyone hates it. Like, no, they're going to make something better. They're going to make something that people will enjoy. And I think having a security feature that just works all the time, constantly, without you really having to think about it, that is inherently superior.
It's kind of amusing that like we have to explain this, but even you shouldn't have to explain this because you just have to look historically what Apple does. But there are thick-headed people that think that Apple likes to do things for spite just to screw consumers over.
I've seen so many tweets out there that are like, oh, how could they get rid of Touch ID?
Well, yeah, and do you remember years ago when they switched from the 30-pin connector to Lightning? And so many people that even friends of mine were saying Apple just it's just a cash grab to buy cables, which is it was absolutely not the case.
No, the 30-pin connector was archaic.
Apple isn't
even then
driven by making a quick buck. They're driven by stuff that is exciting to them. Technology that improves an experience or does things to save battery life or stuff that affects the consumer. Like, it's just funny. People look for these conspiracy theories. Like, they're just out to get me. They're just out to get my money.
Yeah, exactly. And Lightning was better than the 30-pin connector. It just was.
And now everyone loves Lightning cables. They're reversible. They're brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact,
except when they break,
that's what led to the creation of USB-C in the first place.
Right.
Like, USB-C basically owes its existence to Lightning. Apple joined the USB group and they put forward the USB-C spec. So it literally wouldn't exist if it weren't for the work that Apple did on Lightning. Of course, USB-C in iPhones, probably not, because the connector is too thick.
Well, like we've talked about on many occasions, they need to do some kind of miniaturized, just quickly, just to refresh my memory, was it that you said they would keep, if they were to do it, they would keep the physical Lightning connector, but internally it would be USB-C? Be like a mini USB-C connector.
So they're kind of already starting to do that. So the new iPad Pros and the 12.9 inch, oh wait, no, what am I saying? Is it 12.9 or is it 12.2? Anyways, the 12 inch iPad Pro,
0.9,
the first one, and both new iPad Pros, they actually have USB 3 in the Lightning ports and USB-C fast charging. So they're already starting to augment Lightning with USB-C and USB 3.0 and 3.1 stuff.
You are correct, by the way, 12.9.
Okay. And so the iPhone 8 and possibly the 7S will continue that trend. So the new iPhones will have fast charging. They'll have USB 3.0 speed. And that'll be even with the Lightning connector. So I think somewhere down the road, Apple probably puts forward a proposal to create a USB-C micro port, a smaller USB-C port that can work for mobile phones. Obviously, there's a ton of Android phones that are now using USB-C, but the connector is like twice the thickness of Lightning. It's chunky. So
if anything, the one thing I would like to see Apple do is do something to make their own first-party Lightning cables a little more sturdy.
Yeah, that would be great.
You've seen those pictures online of cables frayed and stuff like that at the ends, that rubber over time when exposed to heat and stuff like that. It does not handle temperature changes very well. And I think they need to do something about the jacketing on the cable to make it a little more sturdy. Even that, I mean, they created that problem, created, opened up a whole new market for aftermarket lightning cables that are that have braiding and all sorts of fancy features.
And Kevlar and all this other stuff. Some of it's some a little made out of metal.
Well, some of it's a little silly and overkill, but it is a legit problem that does happen. I've never had a lightning cable have that problem at all. It kind of shocks me when I see this. But anyways,
yeah, I've been pretty
derailed
lucky.
The conversation a little
I've been
bit.
Pretty lucky, but yeah. I think somewhere down the road they do come up with USB-C micro and it ends up looking a lot like Lightning.
Yeah.
And then at that point, Apple will basically be like, okay, the iPhones are now USB-C micro. Yeah. If it looks exactly the same as Lightning, nobody has to do anything.
Yeah.
But if not, we'll have another cable crisis, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So anyways, moving on.
So the last segment of the show, we got about, I would say 11 or 12 minutes. So
cool.
What else is going on?
So, in other news, the other large smartphone company in the world, Samsung, their chairman, well, not their chairman, it's kind of complicated. The son of the chairman, right. Who is actually currently running Samsung. The complicated thing is that the actual chairman is in a coma and has not died. So because of the way that Asian culture tends to be, like, this is a thing in Japan and South Korea.
Nepotism.
Not quite, maybe China as well. But there's this very strong sense of filial piety. So basically the son can't take over for the father unless the father is dead. So because he's not actually dead, he can't replace him as chairman. So the father is still technically the chairman of Samsung, but because he's in a coma, the son effectively runs the company day to day. He just doesn't have the title yet. So that's a whole thing. But more importantly, the son was just sentenced to 5 years in prison for corruption and it's all related to that
embezzlement.
And embezzlement and I think fraud, maybe.
Yeah, a bunch of things. There was like a roster list
of things
that he did.
Basically, he was connected to that massive corruption scandal in South Korea that resulted in the president of South Korea being ousted from her position that also involved a creepy Rasputin type. Basically, she had this friend who I think told fortunes or something. Like, she was kind of a witchy sort of person, like spiritual and things. And she basically...
Like a mystic or something.
Yeah, kind of. And she became the president's best friend and her chief advisor and all of this other stuff. And basically, she was like running an entire racket, like glad-handing, taking bribes for time with the president, favors, a bunch of stuff. And the Samsung guy got heavily implicated in this entire mess. So that woman is in jail. The president is no longer the president. And now the Samsung heir has been sentenced to 5 years in prison. Now, traditionally, this sort of thing doesn't stick. There have been a lot of high-level kaiball executives that have basically been pardoned by the South Korean government over things like this. But I think this will actually stick because of the notoriety of the scandal and the massive public outcry about it. Like, the streets were literally filled with every South Korean in Seoul protesting this entire mess to the point where the president was finally forced to step down. So, I mean, the current public mood about this situation is very charged. So I find it highly unlikely that they will actually pardon him. I think they may limit the sentence. Like, they might bring it down to two and a half years, but he will still go to prison for sure because of the current climate there. Like,
can you imagine what a prison is like there?
It's probably like our prisons, just kind of nice. And I mean, it's white collar crime, so he's not exactly going to go to a prison filled with murderers.
Right. Not probably not a maximum security prison.
No, he will go to Club Fed. But still, more bad news for Samsung. Although I don't know how much it really affects their day-to-day operations. Like,
well, I don't think, I'll say right now, I don't think it's going to really affect it at all.
No, like, I mean,
it's
may
a PR problem. It doesn't look good for the company. I'm sure there's a level of, just because of the culture, there might be a level of shame maybe internally.
Yeah, probably.
At the company.
Probably. And there may be like a power struggle internally. Like maybe people will be like, well, the family is clearly not good, so someone else should take charge kind of thing. Especially if he does end up in prison, because then that'll look really bad. And so it's possible that someone else high up in the company will try to take power. Yeah. These large companies in South Korea, it's always a huge drama with them. Like families and all this other stuff. It's ridiculous. So I think Samsung will probably be fine. Like it doesn't really matter per se, but it's going to make their internal politics quite chaotic for the next little while, which is not so great because they just unveiled the Galaxy Note 8. Guaranteed not to explode, we promise. Mm.
And the Note's always what? Just a bigger version of the 8? Like, I never really understood the purpose
like,
of that.
It's a big phone.
Is that the
with
one with
the stylus?
Stylus? Yeah, it's got the stylus. Right, okay.
The S Pen. So this particular Note is actually getting very middling reviews because primarily it's just a slightly bigger S8 Plus. It is literally 0.1 inches bigger, the screen size, mm-hmm. that is. Like, and this is not a dramatically bigger screen compared to the existing S8 Plus phone.
I was just going to say that you always used to have quite a noticeable difference in the like the physical size of it.
Yeah, exactly.
They're big, chunky, wide, kind of, people call them phablets.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, the Note was always like a 6-inch phone, and their other phones were usually 5-inch or 4-inch. I think at one point it even was like, I want to say 7 inches, but that's probably too big. It was probably like 6.8 or something. Yeah, like they were big phones compared to their other flagship models. But this time around, it's only slightly bigger. It's got the same edge-to-edge display. Though they changed it a bit, it's more flat than the S8. So there's actually more like flat space on top of the phone, presumably to make it easier to write on with the stylus. They added 2 gigabytes extra RAM, and there is a dual lens camera on the back, and that's it. And also it costs $1,299 US.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's iPhone Plus territory.
That's even more than iPhone Plus territory.
Right. That's like Air iPad or MacBook Air territory.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah, kind of. The Air actually starts at $1,199, or no, it starts at $999 in the States.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's like a 13-inch Air or something.
Or like a 256 gig 7 Plus.
Right.
Sort of. I think even that's like $1,199 in the States. So, yeah. Very expensive. Though, I mean, with subsidies and so on, people probably aren't going to end up paying that exact amount.
A lot of people don't.
But it'll still be quite costly. Like I saw that TELUS announced the subsidy price for the Note 8 here. And it started at $500 and something plus a 2-year contract with a plan that cost a minimum of $60 or $70 a month.
It's a lot of money up front for a lot of people.
Yeah. That was if you went for the more expensive plan. And I think if you went for a less expensive plan, it was like $700 and something up front.
Yeah, because they always do that here. For those of you listening that are American, they do this thing, a lot of carriers here, where they have these tiered plans. Like usually, like they'll call it a gold and a platinum plan. And if you go with the more, how does it work? It's the more... The platinum plan is cheaper on a contract. The phone is cheaper on a contract with the better plan, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So
it gets
the more
cheaper and cheaper.
The more expensive the plan, yes. The higher the tier of the plan, the more money you get off the phone.
Right. That's such a scam.
It
gives
is.
It the illusion that the phone is really cheaper. But over time, though,
oh, yeah.
If you actually do the math and add up what you're paying for that phone, mm-hmm. plus the your phone bill alone, it's insanely expensive.
Yep. Though, I mean, the thing is, it's amortized across 2 years, so you don't really notice it as much.
That is true.
Sure, you might end up spending a little more money, but psychologically, it's not like you're spending more money.
So we have kind of a not so exciting Samsung Note release. You know, what's going on with Android? So we got Android Oreo coming out, and is there a new Pixel? I haven't seen anything about a Pixel phone.
They are supposedly announcing the Pixel 2 and the Pixel 2 XL in October, early October. And I gotta say, it is really disappointing because the design of the Pixel 2 is not edge to edge. So
I haven't even seen a photo of it. I didn't even know there was anything released yet.
Yeah, there have been some renders that have leaked.
Okay.
It's probably the real deal.
Is this the one where they finally get a good camera in it?
Well, the Pixel had a decent camera, and I mean, it was augmented by a lot of AI stuff. This one will probably be just as good. I mean, the other companies don't... It can be kind of hit and miss with the camera sensors for a lot of these phones.
Yeah.
Like,
actually, to be fair, I think the over the last couple of years, Samsung's phones, the Galaxy phones have been getting good reviews with their... I mean, as much as we don't like the crap that they put on top of Android, the actual camera itself is supposedly quite good. And I've seen some of those photos.
Oh, yeah.
They're quite good photos.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they've been making really decent cameras the past few years. They're catching Apple up even. And in some cases they've been better. Just different choices in the pipeline. Apple tends to do a lot more noise reduction, which can sometimes result in messier photos at certain light levels. But hopefully this time around, Apple's kind of sorted it out. I'm curious to see all the smart camera stuff that's in the new iPhone. All the AI-driven stuff that modifies how it takes photos depending on the situation. If that actually results in a better shot overall. And obviously the camera sensor will be another huge upgrade from the previous version, as always. Like, if there's one thing you can count on with the new iPhone, it's that the camera is going to be way better than the last one. And this one will shoot 4K HDR at 60 frames a second. So that'll be pretty good. The Note 8 is kind of blah, but for people who really like that stylus, they will buy it regardless. They do have a dedicated fan base who surprisingly didn't leave them after the whole exploding fiasco with the Note 7. Samsung's really bounced back from that to their credit. Like, they did a pretty decent job apologizing and making it right. Like, they gave people that bought a Note 7 a lot of free stuff, and they just really made it right. And they learned from their mistake. They built a whole new battery testing facility just to make sure that this problem wouldn't happen again. I mean, obviously hindsight 2020, but they probably should have done it to start with. But overall, it hasn't really hurt their business a whole lot. Like, they did lose a bunch of money in that quarter, but not as much as people were expecting, and they've bounced back. So, I mean, for all the ribbing I give Samsung, they do a pretty decent job at what they do. Like, their phones continue to have a ton of flaws. The software just isn't there.
Well,
constantly...
I mean, a lot of that could be corrected just by putting stock Android on those things, right? Because the phones itself, they're not poorly built phones or anything.
Oh, no.
I mean, they're still not quite... I think they will always be a step behind, just like one step behind Apple's quality of sort of the fit and finish.
Mm-hmm.
But they're pretty close, though.
Yeah.
And that gap has narrowed over the years, certainly.
Oh, yeah, big time. Like, the S8 is a beautiful phone.
Like, I remember, but if we go all the way back to the Galaxy 3, do you remember what that phone was like? Mostly plastic. you know, just, but
it wasn't even close.
Yeah. It was so far. And now in a matter of like 5 years, that gap has just gotten more and more narrow.
Yep. And I mean, now they have like glass on either side of the phone and in the middle, I think it's still plastic. I don't think they've quite transitioned to metal yet, but that's because Apple has all the metal. All of it. Mm-hmm.
But the material, whatever the materials they're using, they're much higher quality.
Oh, absolutely. And their industrial design team really has to be given some credit. Like, yeah.
Are they still putting that their stupid logo, Samsung logo on the front?
Nope.
The bezel, did they take that off? Because that always made it look ugly.
Yeah, there was no room for it on the S8 design. So it is gone. Still plastered all over the back, though.
That's fine. I don't care if it's on the back, but it didn't look good. It, you know, it's different to have like Apple, where they have like, you know, the iconography to have an icon there is okay. That wouldn't bother me. But Samsung is just like Samsung text, right? It's nothing special. And to have that plaster on the front just makes it look worse. Anyway.
Yeah.
So it's gone.
Yep.
So the phone looks a lot nicer.
Oh, yeah. And ditto for the Note 8.
Mm-hmm. So we may need to do, I was just thinking too, because there will be more and more details about Android Oreo, but I would like to spend some time this coming week going over the updates in Oreo, so we can maybe talk about that a little bit too, because I like to try to, you know, as much as an iPhone user I am, I do like to try to keep myself abreast of what's going on in the world with Android.
Yeah, there's definitely some cool things in Oreo, of course.
I heard there was a night something equivalent to Night Shift or something like that, or it was they made a tweak to it or something, like they allow you to adjust the orange levels on the I don't know what they call it.
It's not called
Night Shift, but
I think that's just on the Pixel. There are some features that are like on the Pixel.
Yeah, you're
phones.
Right. It's probably a Pixel thing. So you wouldn't need stock Android for that. And maybe the actual Google hardware. I'm not entirely clear on that.
Yeah, they have custom builds for the Pixels. So there's a lot of features that actually get locked out for other phones. Like a lot of the camera stuff and a lot of the Google Assistant stuff. There's things that are only on the Pixel that aren't on other builds.
You really should try to buy a Google phone, shouldn't you? If you're going to go Android.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it really
absolutely.
Is.
I mean, Samsung is decent. They are definitely making better phones than Google at this point. The Pixel 2 obviously is not edge to edge. It doesn't look as good, but it will have features that no other Android phone has. And it will have capabilities that no other Android phone has. As Google inevitably starts to manufacture more and more custom components for these phones. And I would wager that next year the Pixel will be edge to edge. I think they maybe got caught by surprise this time around. They probably already designed it before this trend kind of showed up. So it was too late to do anything about it. But next year, I would think they will definitely have an edge to edge design. We will have to talk more about that next time.
You've been listening to the Impromptu One Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast in iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there. And wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.